So go ahead and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 9, and we're going to be looking at the wonderful subject of death, I came across a really interesting article. It's one that piqued my attention as I read it, and it's titled, Runner's Cause of Death, Struck by an Airplane. Struck by an airplane. That's one that makes you scratch your head, right? And so I decided I was going to read this because anything that'll convince me not to run is something I want to pay attention to. Much safer, apparently, to sit on the couch than to run on the beach. No, I'm just kidding. But the article went on to say that there's this guy in his 30s just out jogging at Hilton Head Island in South Carolina, and he was there jogging. He may have had headphones, so he couldn't have heard anything, but there above him in the sky was an airplane. It was a single engine, single propeller airplane that was stalling, having trouble. It was having engine problems, and so it was needing to make an emergency landing at the airport, at Hilton Head Airport. It didn't make it. So it landed on the beach at Hilton Head on top of the runner, killing him. Talk about bad, sort of bad luck right there. That was just right at that, one step, anyways. If I had been running, I would have been like a mile back because I'm so slow. So, but when we hear about these kinds of things, it just reminds us about just the frailty of life, isn't it? We hear about people dying at a young age, and it just impacts us because it makes us sad. We don't like the subject of death. We don't like hearing about it. Even when we hear about people that have made it to their 70s or 80s or 90s or even 100, when we hear that they've passed away, it still makes us sad. Because we just don't like the topic of death. Now, on the other hand, as much as we don't like it, it's still something that is a reality to us all. And so for us to talk about it this morning is not being morbid. It's actually something that we're just being realistic here. And so let's go ahead and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Benjamin Franklin and Mark Twain both said this. They said, the only two certainties in life are what? Are death and taxes. We're not going to talk about taxes this morning, but we are going to talk about death. Because this is something that all of us are going to face at one point. I remember in my very first year at Island Pond, I was working with someone that was having some health problems, but he was generally healthy. But then the next month, he was in the hospital. Within a few short weeks, he was on hospice. And within a week or two, he was gone. And so that was the first funeral I'd ever done. And so I worked very hard to get ready. And I did the funeral. And then after, you know what I did with those funeral notes? I kept them. Because I knew that I would be needing them again in the future. Turns out I did. Because death is coming for everyone. It's coming for everyone. And in our passage today, Solomon's going to be giving us some wisdom, some words of wisdom about what we can do in light of the reality of death. And so we're going to look at verses 1 through 12. We're going to go in sort of a different order, though. We'll look at the first section, verses 1 through 6. And then we'll skip ahead to verses 11 through 12. And then we'll come back to the middle part, verses 7 through 10. And so what should we do thinking about that? Here's the first thing that we need to remember about death, is that death is a certainty for us all. I've already made that point fairly clear, so I won't spend too much time on this one part. But let me read verses 1 through 3. He says, but all this I laid to heart examining it all, how the righteous and the wise and all deeds are in the hand of God. Whether it is love or hate, man does not know. Both are before him. It is the same for us all. Since the same event happens to the righteous and to the wicked, to the good and the evil, to the clean and the unclean, him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As the good one is, so is the sinner, and he who swears is as he who shuns an oath. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun. that the same event happens to all. Also, the hearts of the children of man are full of evil, and madness is in their hearts while they live, and after they all go to the dead. So again, I've already started talking about this in the introduction, that we're all going to die. And so Solomon observes, though, that this is not something that we can choose. So I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but for those that are rich, guess what? You're going to die. You're going to die. And I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but for those that are poor, you too! You are going to die as well. All of us are going to die. And what Solomon wants us to recognize here is that, yes, we cannot live like we're going to go on forever. Because to live like that is to live foolishly. Instead, we need to recognize that there is an end coming for us all on this earth. I was reading about a man named Ted Williams. He was a baseball player. And as he approached death, he decided that he would get frozen, cryogenically frozen. Sort of, I picture Han Solo. And so he was, he signed up, and then when he died, his plan was that he would be frozen. And then one day, as technology progressed years down the road, that he would then be unfrozen, and that whatever disease killed him, they would then be able to fix so that he could live on for a lot longer. Now, it turns out it hasn't worked out quite that way so far. And I read that in the article saying that his body in this frozen state is not doing well. Because of the fluctuating temperatures, his head has 10 different cracks in it because, you know, it's a cold, hot, cold, hot, cold, hot. And so by the time he gets to, you know, 2,000 years, whatever, not sure it's going to work for him. But you know what? I don't blame him for trying. I think his methods are wrong here, but I give him credit for at least recognizing the end is coming for him. Young folks, I don't want to scare you or depress you this morning, but if you live like you're just going to live on forever, you're going to live in a way that you're not going to do everything that God is calling you to do. The older you get, the more you realize that, yes, death is coming, and we can't put our head in the sand. It is coming for us all. So do you recognize that? Do you recognize that? And so we're going to go on to the next point in verses 11 through 12. He says, or his point is that how long we live is not certain. Again, this is verse 11. Again, I saw that under the sun the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to those who are with knowledge, but time and chance happen to them all. For man does not know his time. Like fish that are taken in an evil net, and like birds that are caught in a snare, so children of man are snared in the evil in an evil time. When it suddenly falls upon them. The key there is verse 12, where he says, for man does not know his time. So we know we're going to die, but the frustrating part is that we don't know when that is going to happen. And he gives this example of a fish. The fish is just swimming around, just minding his own business, and then out of nowhere, this net comes and pulls the fish out of the water. And the fish is like, wait a second, what's happening here? It's just out of nowhere. And that's what death is going to be like. Most of us are not going to anticipate the moment that it's going to happen. I read a CNN article from back in 2019, and it was about a grandmother who died, get this, at a gender reveal party for a baby that's being born. A gender reveal party. Someone's dying. The family made a homemade device to reveal the gender of the baby. And so all they did was they placed a little gunpowder with blue powder in the bottom of a homemade stand. And then they welded it to a metal base plate. And then they taped it shut not realizing that they had just created a pipe bomb. And so the bomb went off, and a piece of shrapnel came off from it, hitting poor grandma in the head, killing her. Now, after I read that story, I thought, my goodness, I could see some of you in this church building something like that for your gender reveal party. So please be careful out there, church. The article went on to say that disasters during gender reveal parties are not uncommon. They gave two examples. In Australia, someone hooked up some blue smoke to a car, I don't know how they did it, and then spun the wheels, and it caught on fire, destroying the car. Or in Arizona, there's a video of this where they blew up this device in the middle of the wilderness in Arizona, and it sparked a wildfire, burning 47,000 acres of land and causing $8 million in damage. Now, thankfully, in these last two, someone didn't die, but all of these are from a gender reveal party. You just never know, do you? You never know. My point is that tragedy can strike literally at any moment. We just don't know. James puts it this way. He says, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a town or such and such a place and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. And so let's pause for a moment, because we've made it through sort of what I might consider the morbid or depressing part of the message. And let's review what Solomon has said so far. Solomon has said, hey, we're all going to die, but sadly, we don't all know when we're going to die. So how do we as Christians respond to information like that? How do we live? How do all of us live knowing that death is coming? Do we go and hide? Do we go and sell everything and go live on top of a mountain waiting for that moment? Now, how do we live? Well, we're going to look at verses 7 through 10, where Solomon's going to give us some ways that we can live in light of the death that's coming. And I'm going to read the verses, and then I'm going to give 2 points from these verses. So Solomon says, go, eat your bread with joy, and drink your wine with a merry heart. For God has already approved what you do. Let your garments be always white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that he has given you under the sun. Because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. Whatever you do, or whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. For there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. So here's the first point that we can see in light of death. So knowing death is coming should cause us to live like we don't have forever. It should cause us to live like we don't have forever. But this should be a good thing. This should help us live more productively. Stephen Covey writes business books, or wrote business books, and he wrote a famous one called 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And one of the main points that he gives is this, that we need to begin with the end in mind. Begin with the end in mind. And what he's talking from a business perspective is that if you know where you're at, and if you know where you want to get to, then that will help you take the right path to get there. Now, thinking about this in terms of death, we know where we're at, we know what's going to happen, but knowing this should help us then live more effectively along the way. And so he gives some suggestions. Solomon does, not Stephen Covey. Solomon gives some suggestions about what we should do, and he says things like eating, like drinking, like wearing white, which is a festive color. Like enjoying your spouse, like putting on oil, which think just lotion, not having cracked skin. But after looking at these, what I believe is that the specifics are not the main point here. So he's not saying, hey, all of you, wear white or else. Hey, all of you, enjoy your wife and those that aren't married to so on. Tough luck. No, what he's saying there is that these are not things that specifically we should follow, but the general idea is that we should enjoy what I call the simple things of life. Enjoy the simple things of life. You see, a wise person recognizes that he will not live forever, and so he will enjoy life to the best of his ability. A wise person will enjoy the meals with his family. A wise person will enjoy food and celebrations. A wise person will enjoy his or her spouse. A wise person will engage in hobbies that makes him or her have fun and enjoy things and feel fulfilled. And so, are you catching a theme here? It's enjoy. Enjoy life. Do these things. Do these simple things. And this is coming, by the way, from a man who had it all. This is coming from one of the richest men in the world, yet he said he had all these material things. He listed them in earlier chapters. He had lots of houses and the fanciest chariots and all the pleasures he could get. And what does he say? Knowing that death is coming, enjoy these simple things in life. Rich or poor, these are all things that we can do. If you have a lot of money, you can enjoy the simple things of life. If you have almost no money, you can still enjoy the simple things. You can enjoy life. Last month, I was in North Carolina, and I went to a pastor's conference, and so I had a nice time enjoying some of the North Carolinian food. And so I had some barbecue. I love barbecue. And so I went there three different times, and I took a picture every time. Doesn't count if you don't take a picture of it. And so I had all this barbecue all the few days I was there. And then in the evening time, I found this little, I don't know, custom bakery with cupcakes that I can have. And so I bought them almost every day, chocolate cupcakes and cookies. And then we had some from Sonic. I don't know. They don't have Sonic up here that I know of, but they have the root for or the cherry limeades and strawberry limeades. We got that. And there up at the top, I have my cookie. I didn't let her have it. I just took a picture with it, and I ate it real quick. But I enjoyed life. I enjoyed those cookies. But you know what? At the end of the trip there, you know what I really wanted? I wanted just to be back home and enjoy my wife's cooking more than that. Like, we've all been there. We travel. We enjoy the time. But what's even more fun is just being back home and enjoying just those simple meals with family. That's what I was longing for after all this good food. Now, you may be thinking, all right, Kyle, everything you just said sounds good. It sounds inspiring. But it doesn't sound very churchy. It doesn't sound very religious. I recognize some of you are probably thinking that. And I want to say, yes, it doesn't sound religious, but track with me over the next few minutes here. Maybe that's because you have the wrong idea of Christianity. Maybe that's because you don't really have the correct understanding of what God wants for you in your life. Maybe it's not this or that. Maybe it's not be a devoted Christian or have fun. Maybe it's not love God or have a good life. Maybe it's both. Maybe it's both. Now, I'm going to say this from the beginning, that God calls us, Jesus says, that we are not to love the world. We're not to love the world. For example, in Luke chapter 9, Jesus says, "For whoever would save his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. For what does it profit a man that he gains the whole world and yet loses or forfeits himself, or other translations say his soul?" So Jesus is saying, hey, people, love me first. Love me first. Don't love possessions over me. But as we love Jesus, as we put Jesus first in our life, then we're in a better position to enjoy the other things that God has blessed us with. You see, once you put God first in your life, then you've actually put yourself in a better place to then more fully enjoy the things of the world. I like how David Gibson put it. He's a pastor in England, I believe, and he said, in the created world, you can only truly enjoy what you do not worship. And the problem is that without God, with pushing God to the side, when we enjoy other things in life, we cling too tightly on them. I think of when my wife was in labor and she wanted to hold my hand. Hey, I love holding my wife's hand, but she clung too tightly onto me. Ow! Then again, she was with most of the pain there, so I can't say too much in that moment. But listen, when we take these things of the world, and when we take them, we start to smush them down because we want these as our satisfaction in life, we end up destroying the thing that actually could give us satisfaction if we were putting it in its proper place. David Gibson goes on to say, the man who makes sex his God and who worships it discovers that actually what is normal, pleasurable, soon becomes inadequate, soon enough. And he becomes chained to a path whereby he begins to only enjoy perversion, which of course is no enjoyment. Or another example, the woman who makes her family her God and who worships her children discovers that they will fail her and disappoint her and do not achieve all the things that she wanted them to achieve. And so she is left empty and unfulfilled. You can fill in the blanks with every single one of the good things that he listed in his book above. But when you worship God's gifts, they will never ever deliver what they promise, and instead will leave you empty and broken. So we must see this first, church, that if you put things over God, then the things that could give you some pleasure, that could give you some enjoyment, are in the end going to leave you frustrated and feeling empty. But when we see life and things as a gift from God, and when we put God first in our life, and then we enjoy the things in that order, then we can truly enjoy them. I like how one pastor put it. He said, gift, not gain, should be your motto. And so instead of always trying to get, or achieve, or get somewhere, instead, maybe we should at times just stop and enjoy things as a gift from God. I remember a while back, this is when we only had three kids, my mother-in-law took us out to eat. And for those of you who have young kids or who had young kids, you probably recognize that it's tough taking them to restaurants. And so we were conditioned with three young kids that we get in, we order, we eat, and we get out before the meltdowns happen as quick as possible. And so this is just some, like, we were just conditioned that we're in there, and before the drinks even hit the table, we know what we want. Before the waitress even comes to ask us what we want to drink, we know exactly what we're ready to order. So there we are at the restaurant, and my wife and I have picked out the food for us and our three kids, and my mother-in-law is there, and she's opened the menu and is still just looking at the appetizers. Enjoying. Why? Because she hadn't been traumatized by three kids at restaurants in the past. She hadn't been through those experiences. In other words, she knew how to enjoy the restaurant, how to enjoy the menu. While us, on the other hand, we were just sort of in, get it on, and get out of there before they start screaming too much. Now, parents, some of us need to just stop and enjoy life as a gift from God instead of always trying to go, and get somewhere. Now, maybe the restaurant isn't the best place to stop, but other places, parents, we need to just enjoy, slow down, and enjoy these gifts that God has given us. We've all heard. I hear them. The parents that are older now with kids out of the house, what do they always say? They just grow up so fast. And so let's stop, pause, slow down, be like my mother-in-law, and let's enjoy the time that God has given us. Now, I'm willing to bet, though, that there's some of us in here that doesn't, that think that God doesn't want them to have a good time. They think that it's not the Christian way. Now, there's other people in here that are the opposite, that are having what I might call maybe too good of a time at the expense of their relationship with God. And I want to say that both sides are wrong. Both sides are wrong. Put God first in your life and then enjoy the things that he's given you and do it in that order. Do it in that order. So that's the first thing that we see here in these verses, that we need to enjoy these simple things, and we need to know that the end is coming and live like that. But here's the second thing, and this is my last point for the message, that we can learn from this passage, knowing death is coming should cause us to look toward eternity. Solomon lists all these things that we should do, and these are simple things that we should do individually looking at them, enjoying your spouse, eating, all those are simple things that we can do. But when you put them all together, what does it remind you of? Maybe it doesn't remind you of anything, but what it points to is a wedding feast, a wedding feast. David Gibson says, I find it interesting that verses 7 through 10 are full of wedding imagery. Food, drink, white garments, oil, and a husband and a wife. That is because the Bible's picture of the best life that can that life can offer us is simply a foretaste of a wedding banquet still to come. The beauty and grandeur and glory of which cannot be put into words. So track with me. Scripture is full of these references of these wedding feasts that we're going to be of wedding feasts. And it's not necessarily a literal wedding feast, but that's what it's pointing to in heaven. Revelation 19, Luke 14, or Isaiah 25, for example, Isaiah, it says, on this mountain, the Lord of hosts will make for all people a feast of rich food, a feast of well-aged wine, a rich food full of marrow, and aged wine well refined. In other words, some good food. This isn't 7-Eleven food. This is Ruth's Chris Steakhouse food. And he will swallow up on this mountain the covering that is cast over all peoples, the veil that is spread over all nations. He will swallow up death forever. And the Lord God will wipe away every tears from all faces and the reproach of his people, and will take away from all the earth, for the Lord has spoken. Meaning, hey, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. See, some of us have the wrong idea of heaven. We picture heaven as this cute place where, you know, some harps are playing, some babies are floating with little wings and everything. Or maybe others of us picture it as this boring church service where we're singing, I could sing of your love forever, and it goes on forever and ever. And it just goes on. But listen, that is not how the Bible paints heaven. The Bible paints it as a party, as a celebration, as a homecoming, as something that you are going to enjoy being at. There is no mention ever of anyone in heaven being bored, of anyone in heaven not having a good time. This is where we're going to celebrate. This is where all the pain's going to be taken away. This is where all the death is going to be vanquished and taken, and it's going to be taken away. This is going to be a good place. And so the Bible makes it clear that heaven is going to be glorious. And so it's possible. It's possible that when Solomon says, hey, do these things in verses 7 through 10, there's this dual meaning here where he's saying, hey, do these things, enjoy life. But also the things that he's pointing to enjoy life, he's saying are done to help remind us of the future that is to come. He wants us to enjoy life, but he wants us to do these things because they will remind us in a small way of what heaven will be like one day. I want you to think of Jesus. Jesus who came from heaven and then came sort of like as an out-of-towner down to earth. And when he came down to earth, he brought some of his out-of-towner customs here. And what do we always see Jesus doing in Scripture? He's always having meals with people and enjoying people, doing all these celebrations with people. He's constantly having a good time. Gibson writes, "The sheer number of times Jesus and food are mentioned together is quite staggering. The reason is that he, Jesus, is the ultimate preacher in Ecclesiastes, the true wise man. He is the embodiment and fulfillment of the vision of life that the preacher in Ecclesiastes has been holding out to us. God's good world is there to be enjoyed in relationship with others, and we eat and drink together now, listen, in anticipation of our feasting together then. Every meal is a foretaste, an appetizer for the banquet that is to come." So don't miss this. Don't miss this. Could it be that the activities in your life that you enjoy doing are really just a foretaste of pointing you to the enjoyment of what you're going to have in the future? And one of the ways that we can do this, that we can live our best way now, is not just to do religious activities, but is to enjoy the life that God's given us. And as we do that, what we're doing, as we're enjoying the things he's given us, is that it's causing us to then look up. To look up knowing that it's good now, but it's going to be even better in heaven, in that future party. Let me close with this. In the C.S. Lewis's books, The Chronicles of Narnia, one of the last books in the last battle, there's a scene where the children and the animals all move from old Narnia to new Narnia. And when they get to new Narnia, which is a sort of like a symbol or which reminds us of what heaven would be like, they discover, quote, "every rock and flower and blade of grass looked as if it meant more." And so then the unicorn comes in and he sums up what everyone's thinking, where he sort of just stomps his right forehoof on the ground and he neighs like unicorns are supposed to do, apparently. And then he says this, "I have come home at last. This is my real country. I belong here. This is the land I have been looking for all my life, though I never knew it to now. The reason that we love the old Narnia is that it sometimes looked a little like this. Come up further. Come up in." Let me say it again. Could it be, church, that the pleasures of life now are just a small foretaste of what's to come? Could it be that the most amazing pleasures that you have on earth are really just a sample of something even greater that's going to be coming up for you in heaven? We all know death is coming. We don't know when, but it's coming. And so I want to encourage you, instead of despairing, look up. Look up. Look to Jesus and enjoy life as a gift from him.